Good morning. It is really good to be back in this space today. The last time I was here, I was at the piano, and so this time I get to be here in a different vein. So it's kind of new territory, but kind of not very familiar at the same time. So I'm excited to deliver this message with you. As was said before, I'm a membership coordinator and the co-meets director at the UU Church of Annapolis. I'm also a student at Wesley Theological Seminary, working on my master's in divinity degree. In the next 15 to 20 minutes, you'll get to hear some things that I've learned. I got an opportunity to take UU History and Polity last semester, and I love Olympia Brown. But we're gonna go back 100 so years ago and talk about Olympia Brown and her legacy of faith and social justice. And then we're gonna look at faith, we're gonna look at reason, we're gonna look at Martin Luther King Jr., then we'll move on to toxic masculinity and the Me Too movement. So we're going somewhere in this message right here, so hang on for a bit. If you're new to this church or to Unitarian Universalism in general, we are not necessarily a new religion. Unitarians and Universalists go back 500 plus years, and the theology dates back to the early Christian church. Traditional Unitarianism believed in only one unified God and not a Trinitarian, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And Universalists believed that God accepts everyone into heaven. No one is cast into hell. Either there's no hell or for all eternity, there is no eternal punishment. These theological constructs developed and evolved over the ages, and today we have a liberal religious movement that seeks to accept everyone universally. And we believe that the universe, God, spirit, no God, divine, humanity, whatever language you are comfortable with, works in each of our lives differently, and that this diversity is truly a beautiful thing. Now, I didn't grow up UU. I'm a religious convert of about 6 years. When I was an evangelical Christian playing piano in a Pentecostal church to help pay for my food in college, I remember my preoccupation with hell. It takes a lot of energy to worry about your eternal destination. When I became a Universalist, there was so much freedom that came over me. Now, I grew up Calvinist, and that meant I was assured of my own heavenly destination. I knew I was going to heaven, but I lost sleep over worrying about the fate of my non-believing friends. So, in this regard, Unitarian Universalism was my saving grace. I once was blind, and now I see. I see the light. I see people in a more inclusive light. I am not concerned about who's in my tribe anymore. Tribalism is how so many people can turn a blind eye to the plight of the oppressed. My tribe must come first is the mentality of many folks have, and which I had in the past. And it's somewhat natural. Human beings, we seek belonging. It's healthy to have an identity. You know, we might root for a certain sports team. We might have a favorite band or artist or something that we say we're a fan of. And that's a good, healthy tribe. Now, those differences are good. However, it isn't good when we begin to place one tribe over top of another, which always leads to one tribe dominating and oppressing one another. Yet, unfortunately, that is the history of the world. But a universalist worldview has the potential to break one of us out of that mindset. Taking away the anxiety of the afterlife allowed me to focus on the here and now, and for that I'm eternally grateful. However, the price of waking up means that I am called to help in the healing of the world. And that is what I want to talk about this morning, how this faith in our collective universal salvation, our inherent worth and dignity, cannot just save us, but is a saving grace for the world. Olympia Brown gave her final sermon, The Opening Doors, at the age of 85, a few months after the passing of the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote in the United States of America. She said this about the amendment in her final sermon: "The grandest thing has been the lifting up of the gates and the opening of the doors to women of America, giving liberty to 27 million women, thus opening to them a new and larger life and a higher ideal." Reverend Brown was the first woman to graduate from a theological school and be fully ordained by a denomination in the United States. That denomination was the Universalist Church of America. Her daughter, Gwendolyn Brown Willis, said this about her mother: "The ministry was the first objective of her life, since in her youthful enthusiasm, she believed that freedom of religious thought and the liberal church would supply the groundwork for all other freedoms. Her difficulties and disillusionments in this field were numerous. That she could rise superior to such difficulties and disillusionments was the consequence of a hopefulness and courage with which she was richly endowed." I can somewhat attest to this statement. If I think I can do something, no one's going to stop me from at least trying. But I think what her daughter is saying is Olympia Brown had a lot of faith. Hope and courage require faith. Faith in oneself, faith in the power of relationships, and faith in a higher power or purpose. Reverend Brown, from the time she decided to answer her call, faced many sexist and gender-based discrimination. In fact, within our own predecessors, the Unitarian school, Meadville College, actually denied her application because she was a woman. They were afraid of the experiment of having the first woman enrolled. One of our own recognition of our own shortcomings as UU. She was admitted to St. Lawrence Theological Seminary, where her professors scrutinized and attempted to shame her. She had to jump through hoops to receive her degree and finally achieved ordination. Brown went on to pastor three churches, one in Massachusetts, one in Connecticut, and then her last one, in which she gave this famous sermon in Racine, Wisconsin. Not only was she a profound preacher, but she was a phenomenal minister and was able to revive the Racine Society from a rundown, dead church to a vibrant social and spiritual force in the small Midwestern community. She left the ministry in the 1880s to do what some would call community ministry. She became a leader in the women's suffrage movement. Some would even say she was radical and militant because she had no problem protesting and participating in what the Transcendentalist Unitarian Henry David Thoreau coined as civil disobedience. This included burning President Woodrow Wilson's speeches in front of the White House. Brown's story is so inspirational because she tasted victory. She was able to vote in the 1920 election after the passage of the 19th Amendment. What carried her through the good and the most likely infinite bad times was her deep faith in a universal love of God. She was born and raised a Universalist, and she lived Universalism down to the core. In her final sermon, she spoke with a bold theological foundation for how Universalism can win the world. She believed that this inclusive love of the divine meant salvation in this life for all of humanity. And almost 100 years later, we are about to celebrate this major milestone in human rights. Yet the world is desperately still in need of this universal message. But many of us, like me, did not grow up UU or come to this faith knowing much about UU theology. We knew what we didn't believe anymore. We wore scars and bruises from past experiences, whether religious, family, social, or systemic oppression. We knew what wasn't right for us. But to state what one does believe is different from knowing what you do believe and where you place your faith. Reverend Brown called Universalism the grandest system of religious truth that's ever been revealed to man. That is a bold theological claim, It is rooted in deep faith, a deep appreciation for this gracious life of love that Olympia Brown wants to pass on to the entire world. Excuse me. But what about reason? What about our rich history of intellectualism and skepticism that carries on our Unitarian tradition? Well, I think that Unitarian Universalism is a dance between reason and faith. In the early days after our merger in the 1960s, we relied heavily upon reason. And this is not a bad thing. I am proud of our ability to use reason and science in a religious and spiritual context. That is who we are and is a part of our grand tradition. Throughout history, Unitarians have challenged the scriptures and the knowledge of the day, pushing us further into more openness and innovation. But, and just roll with me a little bit, I think reason has its limits. In the 1960 Christian Century article entitled Pilgrimage to Nonviolence, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about his own faith journey. King and his wife were friends to Unitarians, but decided not to join for this reason quoted in this article. He says, "I also came to see that liberalism's superficial optimism concerning human nature caused it to overlook the fact that reason is darkened by sin. The more I thought about human nature, the more I saw how our tragic inclination for sin causes us to use our minds to rationalize our actions. Liberalism failed to see that reason by itself is little more than an instrument for justifying man's defensive ways of thinking. Reason devoid of the purifying power of faith can never free itself from distortions and rationalizations." King goes on to say that orthodoxy is also not the answer, that fundamentalism is not the way either, but a melding of the two. And I feel the same way about faith and reason. This, the two dance together, and that's what we have in our faith. You know, one takes the lead and the other follows, and the other way around. And that blind faith that ignores the facts of reality is foolish and dangerous, but reason alone does not explain the grandest mysteries of the world, including the miracle of birth and the suffering of death. King uses the word sin, and that's a word that many of us you use tend to shy away from. But what other word makes us feel so uncomfortable? When we think about how our own government has detained and separated children from their parents, or what other word describes the creating of systems that leave people of color out of the wealth and the housing markets through systems of redlining and other oppressive ways? What other word do we have for when men who we deem as role models or upstanding citizens commit the most horrendous sex crimes and then systemically work together to silence the victims? That is sin. The last year I read the Book of Leviticus in the Hebrew scriptures straight through. And it's hard for us to relate to this ancient world where they're sacrificing animals. There are all these purity codes and laws and whatnot. But something struck me about this book. American individualism does not take into account communal sins. And that was baked into the fabric of ancient Israelite culture. I found this fascinating because we don't have something like today. This excerpt from chapter 4 reads this: "If the whole Israelite community sins and does what is forbidden in any of the Lord's commands, even though the community is unaware of the matter, when they realize their guilt and the sin they commit becomes known, the assembly must bring a young bull as a sin offering and present it before the tent of meeting." I'll unpack that a little bit. When our collective conscience has wronged somebody or a group of somebody, the Israelite consciousness acknowledged it and they had a way to return back to that, back to where they should be. For folks 3,000 years ago, that was putting a bull on the altar. I think we progressed a bit from that. But for us, it means taking a look at our behaviors and our systems and making better decisions, better public policies, and better ways to be with one another. Now, I want to call out our communal sin, which is toxic masculinity, something that we as a society have to recognize and we as who identify as men have to take ownership for. In American history, when a marginalized group makes a progressive step forward, we sometimes see a backlash. For people of color, we would call it a white lash. And for what I've seen, the Me Too movement, we have seen men, some call themselves incels or involuntarily celibate because these men do not know what to do in a world where you cannot own, harass, assault, or have your way with the female body, spirit, or soul. So how do we acknowledge this problem and change our ways? Mike McHarg, author and host of the Liturgist and Ask Science Mike podcast, says that men need to have a new script. This is what he said. Men need to go from being a powerful protector to being a powerful advocate. 2, we need to move from the self-perception as a leader or head of household to being a partner. 3, men should be vulnerable, empathetic, and communal, and we should all look a lot like Fred Rogers. And 4, we need to move from a members-only, penis-based perception of masculinity to something more inclusive. Can we all just understand if a trans man is also a man, it does not make me less than a man? If a woman speaks loudly and boldly, it does not make me less than a man. If anything threatens masculinity, it is hyper-masculinity, because hyper-masculinity sets us at odds with the rest of the world and with each other. That is Mike McHarg from the Liturgist episode on man. Find on your podcast. Universalism says that we are all in this together. And that is why Olympia Brown works so hard for the inclusion of women in society on all fronts. Her faith in a God that loved everyone, regardless of looks, beliefs, deeds, creeds, and status, etc. This message that we are all interconnected is how she made it as far as she did to see her, to see the women's suffrage movement to the end. That we are to work together for a more inclusive world. That is all rooted in love. There is no rational way to say that we can end centuries of patriarchy and oppression. Science and reason can help us, but it takes faith for us to believe that we can end these systems. The Me Too movement is an extension of centuries of social progress made for women. Almost 100 years, white women achieved the right to vote in this country, and in 1965, black women won that right as well. And again, we see the world is shifting. And I am hopeful for the coming generations that sexual harassment and assault will no longer be tolerated as the norm, and women of all identities will be seen as truly equal and will experience true freedom in our society. Unitarian Universalism calls us to do everything we can to make that a reality. So as I close, I want to end with this blessing. May you find your salvation in this tradition of faith. May you learn to dance between reason and faith, honoring them both and calling upon each when needed. Women, may you continue to speak your truth to power, and men, may we learn a new script for what it means to be a man as we all do our best to undo this culture of toxic masculinity. And may the entire world come to know and believe in the universal love that surrounds and connects us all. For we all have inherent worth and dignity, and our Unitarian Universalist faith is how we wake up to that reality. May it be so. Amen.